This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, and I'm Richard Harris, sitting in for Ira Flatow. Up first, the odd story of a gene thief. You inherited your genes from your parents. I inherited my genes from mine. That's what makes us human. But next, we're going to hear about an animal that actually steals its genes from other species. The animal is a tiny swimming invertebrate called a rotifer. And it turns out that these animals swipe genes from yeast. They swipe genes from bacteria. They even swipe genes from plants. You could say these critters are picking fruit from the other branches of the tree of life. Matthew Methelson from Harvard University discovered this bizarre behavior. He wrote about it in Science magazine this week, and he joins us by phone from Paris. Welcome, Professor Methelson.
Good evening. Actually, the work was done by a postdoctoral fellow, Irina Arkhipova, and a graduate student, Eugene Ladishev, in my laboratory. We first became interested in these little animals, which are called delloid rotifers, because of asking the question, why does it take two parents to produce one offspring? Why can't just one parent do it? And the answer is there are lots of plants and animals that do it that way, but they go extinct after evolutionarily short periods of time. But there's one group of animals that reproduce. There are no males, no hermaphrodites. They're all females. They lay eggs, which have not gone extinct. They've been around for maybe 100 million years. So if you're interested in this very deep evolutionary problem of why it takes two to make an offspring instead of just one,
right?
Delloid rotifers are the thing to study.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about
amazing in many ways. They were discovered by von Leeuwenhoek, the microscope person, in 1702 because he added water to the dust from the rain gutter of his house, and these little animals came out from this perfectly dry dust. He wrote a letter to the Royal Society about it and sent a package of the dust to them. They still have that dust in London.
Really?
So they're famous because they can be desiccated. And we believe that all of the very unusual things, the gene stealing that you mentioned, the gene acquisition of foreign genes, the asexuality and being able to succeed without males, and their enormous resistance to ionizing radiation, all depend on this strange ability to be completely dried out and come back to life.
Huh, they sound really tough. What do they look like?
Well, they're small. They're about a 50th of an inch long. They're very beautiful. One of them is called a rosy-colored lover of twirling, or Phyllodina roseola. And they fascinated microscopists since Leeuwenhoek in 1702. They're beautiful little creatures. They live in water. They're extremely abundant. If you take some moss, nearly any moss, put water on it, look at it the next day under a microscope, not even a very high-powered microscope, you almost certainly have some delloid rotifers there.
Huh. And how long have you been studying them?
Well, about 20 years ago, when I asked an elderly colleague, why does sex exist? And he said, well, you know about the delloid rotifers. I'd never heard about them, but that's when we began to look at them because of this interest in the question of why it takes two instead of just one to make an offspring.
Yeah. Could you please explain to us how that is the case? Why does two help you so much avoid extinction?
Well, this is one of the major problems in evolutionary biology. There are more than 20 hypotheses to explain it. The answer is there is no general agreement. So we thought that by studying these in the laboratory, maybe we would find out. But it turns out that they, as Irina and Eugene discovered, they can pick up genes from their environment. What we don't know is if they can exchange genes homologously, that is, plug a gene from another rotifer into the same place where that gene was in the parent rotifer. That would be more or less equivalent to sex. What we've published about is not equivalent to sex. It's picking up foreign genes and putting them in a very special place near the ends of the chromosomes. That's not replacing genes in the same place where the corresponding gene used to be.
I see. We're talking to Matthew Methelson from Harvard University, and if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. We're talking about a small organism that might explain the evolution or something about sex, why sex happens sometimes and why apparently in these organisms it doesn't happen. Now, do you have any idea how recently these organisms have stolen these genes? Could this have been happening a long time ago, or do you think they're sort of cruising through the environment, picking them up as they bump into them?
We have no accurate measure of how recently, the most recent ones have been picked up. We think that the older ones have been there for quite a while because they've acquired things called introns, but the short answer is we don't know.
And it is amazing to me that they are able to pick them up from all sorts of other animals. How could they get one from a plant, for example?
When they're dried out, these animals, their DNA is all broken up and their membranes are ruptured, and so foreign DNA could enter. The repair of broken DNA involves, in some cases, the addition of bits of DNA patching between the two pieces or more pieces that are broken. So that may be one way in which the foreign DNA gets in. The next experiment that needs to be done is to find out if they can trade DNA or get DNA from dead rotifers of the same species and have those genes replace their own genes. That would be equivalent to sex. That would be like genetic recombination. They are amazing in another respect. They're enormously resistant to radiation, more than any other animal that has been studied. And this, whatever it is that protects them against radiation, may have important implications for inflammation, for cancer, for aging, for certain neurodegenerative diseases, all things that may be connected with what are called reactive oxygen species that are generated by our metabolism, but also by radiation.
Hmm. Do you think there might be some secrets in there that would help human beings more tolerant of radiation?
Yes, although I don't think human beings need to be more tolerant of radiation, but they do need, perhaps in some cases, to be more tolerant of the oxygen, reactive oxygen molecules that are made normally in our bodies by our energy-producing mitochondria.
I see. Now, some people may recognize your name as somebody from some years ago who was interested in biological weaponry and not in producing it, but in controlling it, of course. And you were famous for recognizing that yellow rain in Vietnam was apparently just bee poop, not a biological attack, for example.
That's right.
Is there any connection between that and what you're studying now, or is it are you just following your curiosity through science?
No connection at all. Just curiosity.
Very good. Well, it's a delight to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Matthew Messelson is a Thomas Dudley Cabot Professor of Natural Sciences at Harvard University, and he joined us by phone from Paris.